Spring is just 3 days away. That is officially, as far as the calendar is concerned. And while the weather might not be the best indicator, there is another surefire sign: the end of the state legislative session. This week and the beginning of next week is an extremely busy time for state lawmakers and staffers. It's do-or-die time for legislation getting pushed through both the Assembly and the Senate before the session is scheduled to end April 3rd. So to help us wade through this madness, we'll be talking with two state lawmakers from Western Wisconsin this hour on the West Side Legislative Roundup. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for tuning in this Monday morning. I'm joined in studio by Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls. Good to have you back, Kathy.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to have you. Good morning. And also joining us is Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Almond. Thank you so much, Kathleen.
Top of the morning to you.
That's right. Happy St. Patrick's Day. I almost said Thanksgiving, so that's
well, all of us Irish are thankful today.
Yeah, that's right. Also, I have to ask, how's the arm?
It's coming along. I look like the bionic woman with my splint on my arm, but it's healing, but very, very slowly.
That is an impressive splint, I'll tell you. For those of you that didn't know, Kathleen was in a car accident in Milwaukee. How long ago was it now?
It was in December.
December, okay. So we're talking about state politics today, legislation that is being rushed through at the last minute. We are really getting to crunch time. One thing that's been in the news quite a bit, you've seen a lot of editorial boards speaking against it, and this is Senate Bill 3024. What it would do was cap the total number of hours that clerks, municipal clerks, would be open for in-person absentee voting to 45 hours during the week, and it would also end in-person absentee voting during the weekend. Republicans say the bill is needed to standardize voting across the state, and some Democrats are calling it voter suppression. And Kathy Bernier, I know that you've been a county clerk for a number of years. I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on the bill, and what is this addressing?
Well, some continuity in the absentee voting hours, for example, in some municipalities who can afford the cost and the staff to open up on nights and weekends. Most municipalities cannot, especially small towns who can't afford to provide those hours of voting for all of their public. So it is to pare down and to make it more reasonable for everyone to be open during a certain number of hours.
A bit of a standardization.
Correct.
And Senator Vinehout, I imagine that you and a lot of your colleagues on the Democratic side of the aisle are not too pleased with this bill.
Well, certainly the press around it has had to do with whether or not it hurts people in urban areas that have had historically long lines at the polls, and a lot of people who maybe work 2 and 3 jobs and just can't get there during normal weekday hours. But I believe that it hurts urban areas and rural areas. I and many of my constituents who work away from our home and maybe have to travel a long ways. Of course, my office is in Madison, but I know folks that are in my neighborhood that work in St. Paul or Minneapolis or Winona, Minnesota, and they have a real hard time getting to vote between the hours set in this bill, between 8 in the morning and 7 at night, only on a weekday. So I and many of my neighbors vote at the kitchen table on the weekend at our town clerk's home, and I have for the entire time that I was a senator. Usually the Senate's in session on Tuesday. Usually Tuesday is an election day. So I would say this bill, by doing away with that practice of voting by appointment on the weekend or later in the evening, this bill really hurts rural residents. I can't think of anybody that it helps. And I really think it's important that the press and the people that are talking about this bill really talk about it as equally disenfranchising voters, both in the urban areas and in the rural areas. I just thought through how easy it would be for me to vote. And, of course, I want to vote in those April 1st elections, as do all of the other people in this area, and it would be very hard to be able to do that. I've got a speaking engagement next weekend. That, even under the current law, that would be the only weekend that I would be allowed to vote. So this is something that should not pass. I have absolutely no idea why people in Madison want to make it harder for people to vote. People work different jobs. They travel. There are truck drivers. There are people that are salespeople that have large regions, and they just can't be available during these very limited 45-weekday week during the day hours.
Representative Bernier, some have accused have said that this bill is basically trying to disenfranchise, especially folks in Milwaukee and Madison, places that have really large populations where this kind of weekend voting is especially needed, I guess.
We had inconsistent polling hours actually on election day for many, many, many years. So when I lived in the town of Anson, my polls didn't open till 9 a.m. Hmm. And in some cities that opened at 7 and then some municipalities at 8. So the idea is to create a standardization. In addition, do not forget, most people voted mail-in absentee in the state of Wisconsin for many, many years with a reason. And both parties, Republican and Democrat, over the last probably 8 years, have been pushing this early voting concept. And it has been very stressful for municipal clerks. I've heard many complaints about the constant bombardment of early voting. And on election day, very few people show up at the polls. It's almost desolate in some cases. I was at a polling place in Chippewa Falls when the big early voting push occurred at the 5th and 6th wards. And at 6 p.m., there was no one in the polling place to vote. And so there is ample opportunity and ample time to vote early, to vote by mail-in absentee. Matter of fact, I would prefer that myself as a representative who may have to be in Madison on that Tuesday on Election Day to get my absentee ballot by mail and get that back to the clerk in that manner. So there's ample opportunity to do that, mail-in absentee, and you do not have to do it in person.
Just a reminder to the listeners, we're talking about the legislation that's being pushed through at the final hour, call it the 11th hour right now. The state legislative session will end April 3rd. At least that's the way it is scheduled to end. There could be a special session, the governor has mentioned, and that is all depending on what happens in the courts with a voter ID law. But nonetheless, we've got State Representative Kathy Bernier, she's a Republican from Chippewa Falls, and we've got Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma. The number is 1-800-228-5615 to call in. The phone lines are pretty much wide open, so let us know what you think of the legislation or just what's on your mind. It's your chance to talk directly with lawmakers from Western Wisconsin. 800-228-5615. You can also post on our Westside Facebook page. So now this bill, 324, and I do want to move on, but this early voting or weekend voting bill goes to the Assembly this week, from what I understand. Senator or Fitzgerald doesn't know how it's going to fare, at least that's what he said in the press. There were some amendments added that say that the state would have to pay half the cost of the early voting hours, which is works out to, I think, $200,000 overall. How do you think Robin Voss and the rest of the Assembly is going to take to that price tag?
Well, I'm in favor of it, of course, as having been a local government official and a village board member. The local governments bear the burden of federal and state elections, and I think that we should probably contribute more to the electoral process at the local level. And so I'm in favor of it. I'm not sure how my colleagues feel about it.
Sure. And I see a nodding head on the shoulders of State Senator Kathleen Vinehout.
Well, this is another example of an unfunded mandate. If what Representative Bernier says is true and a lot more people end up voting by mail, which I have yet to figure out how to do, but I guess I'll have to figure it out in the next couple days, what would happen is that there would be higher postage costs for those clerks. And I think the thinking behind this was that if the state is mandating to the local government, you no longer can keep the polls open during the hours that you were, or you can no longer vote by appointment outside those hours, then the least the state can do is foot half the bill. But again, this is confusing because it only applies to those statewide elections. It doesn't apply to, for example, the April 1st election that we have coming up here in Eau Claire.
Sure. All right, we've got a few callers on the line right now. And first, we're going to go to Colfax. We've got Willem. Willem, thanks so much for calling in. What's your thoughts?
Well, I'm calling concerning Senate Bill 632, which has to do with, and Bill 302 about groundwater. I think they're both related to efforts by the gas and oil industry to change the way that we regulate local control in our state to make it easier for them to access sand and make it harder for local townships and local communities to have a voice or a say in what happens in their township. And it's one of the regulations is that it allows the frac sand mining companies to challenge any ordinance they feel would prevent them from extracting frac sand, and it bars any new ordinances pertaining to zoning or public health, blasting regulations, hours of operation, regulating silica dust, anything like that, and allows them to do that for 25 years. So I think that I don't think our legislature should be acting on behalf of an industry. I think they should be representing the best concerns of the people, the local people. And as a final question, I was wondering if Ms. Bonnier receives political campaigns or campaign funding from the oil and gas industry and like the frac sand industry in Wisconsin. And I just think this bill is clearly like there's a restriction for set aside from a residence to a wind turbine, which is something that can be dismantled and removed. But there is no such regulation between a residence and a sand mine, which will be there for change the environment forever. It cannot be restored.
Got it, Willem. Thanks so much for the call. And first, Senate Bill 632, basically, if I could sum it up, it's being sold as kind of a grandfathering bill to kind of grandfather existing frac sand facilities from a township passing new regulations that might regulate it kind of out of business or out of profitability, I guess. That's kind of how it's being sold by Tom Tiffany and Joan Balwig, the two authors. Kathleen Weinhout, I know that a lot of sand mining happening in your neck of the woods. What are your thoughts on the bill, and do you think it's going to get anywhere this session? It seems to have kind of stalled.
I've spent a lot of time in the last couple of weeks with attorneys, both in the legislature and outside of the legislature, to understand what this bill does. It's very complicated to understand, and you really have to have a clear understanding of what the current municipal law is to figure out what they're trying to do to change it. As you mentioned, Rich, it would freeze in time the regulations, the ordinances at the local level on a sand mine, but at the same time, it would invalidate parts of those existing ordinances. Those parts of the ordinances that have to do with transportation, the parts that have to do with processing plants that are not at the sand mine site would be thrown out under a clause that's on the bottom of page 8 in the bill.
You had mentioned this during testimony and said that this bill could send local regulation of sand mining into legal chaos. So you're still sticking by that? Because during the testimony, I thought that the LRB attorney or the state council
I spent a great deal of the time with that attorney, with the drafting attorney, with the attorney that is on that supports the mining bill, the mining committee in the assembly. I have drafted 4 amendments that I've made public. They've been introduced. They're now working on a memo that I will make public just as soon as I get it from them. I believe that all of the attorneys are now in agreement, and what that attorney said at the hearing is not what's going to be in this memo. So it will invalidate parts of the memo, parts of the existing regulations. In addition, it sets a backdoor for mines to register under a part of the law that was supposed to be used for comprehensive local planning. And if that mine registers, the local ordinance that is in place would not apply as it would apply only to the time period where that that sand mine registers. So say a sand mine got managed to register before the ordinance was put in place or before health and safety measures were put in place, this would freeze at the time of registration, not at the time of the first operation when the spade was in the ground for that. As far as the buffer zone goes, I think that Willem has a great point. I introduced a bill that would create a buffer zone for sand mines. I think that needs to be something that's discussed, should be discussed. It should be part of either the local ordinance or the state law. Unfortunately, the bills that I've introduced haven't even so much as had a hearing, and we've seen these bills move very, very fast. Now, this past week, I spoke with one of the Republicans in the Senate who told me he was a local control guy, and he said that he and two other members of the Senate on the Republican side were upset because Senator Tiffany talked with the industry, but he never talked with those opposed to the bill, and he never talked with those senators that were affected by the bill before he introduced this bill. So I think that has given pause among the Republicans in the Senate. I don't know if the bill will come up. I wouldn't say that it's dead until the legislature's gone home. I'm certainly prepared to go to the floor and to debate it. Like I said, I've already submitted 4 amendments to it, and I think that citizens in western Wisconsin need to be vigilant until the final legislature goes home, and this bill for certain is not going to go forward.
And Representative Bernier, the argument for the need for the bill was that you've had a lot of local municipalities kind of being taken over, or at least the elections have resulted in local town boards or county boards that might be hostile and not want frac sand mining in their neighborhood, and they're using these local regulations to try to de facto ban it. What are your thoughts on this sand mining bill?
Well, I am an advocate for local control. I was on the ground floor when the first arguments began in the town of Cooks Valley on mm-hmm. the county board floor and the town of Howard. So I understand that it's messy. It's sometimes hostile, but it is the best place for the arguments as far as land use issues are concerned. I do have a bit of a concern with a patchwork quilt of air and water quality standards. Mm-hmm. So I believe that's best left up to the EPA and the DNR for setting those standards. Monitoring has been going on. Here's the upside. Universities were at the Capitol last week, and they had all of their projects and their research projects in the Capitol. I walked over to UW-Eau Claire, and there's two professors, geological professors, who have studied the frac sand, the what's between the particles.
Mm-hmm.
They so far have not found any crystalline silica in those particles. And that is a blessing to our citizens, that the health risks of that sand is nowhere near what they thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm optimistic they're going to continue with research. I talked to Dan Masterpole from Land Conservation in Chippewa. The groundwater study is done and unfortunately going to be unveiled tomorrow. And I have to be in Madison. So I asked him to share that research with me. There is nothing that we take from Mother Earth that doesn't impact it. Everything we use, from wood to metals to sand to anything, impacts our environment. But the idea is to do it in the friendliest possible manner possible. And so to minimize the impact, to restore, matter of fact, they're going to start restoring reclamation, mm-hmm. start the process in some of the Chippewa County areas now too.
And they're studying that as well.
Yes, and they're going to start doing it now because some of those sand mines are 3 years old and they can start reclaiming.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to do some test plots. I had suggested that they use some compost from Seven Mile Landfill, and he thought that was an excellent idea. So we're all working together to reap the benefits of the business and industry and yet minimize the impact and address the concerns, the health concerns of the residents. And so I believe that's best done at the local level with land use. And I know it's neighbor arguing with neighbor, And also, what precipitates a bill generally is an abuse of some sort. So there were a few towns, I understand, that were supposedly abusing their authority. And that's what precipitates this. I, too, was a little unnerved that those of us who have sand mines in our districts were not brought in on the discussion in the creation of the bill rather than afterward. And so it's morphed into about, I don't know, six different bills. And I will honestly say it's dead.
All right.
Okay. I'm going to say it.
Also, Willem also wants to know, have you taken any money for contributions from oil, gas industries?
Do you know, I'm not sure.
There are a lot
nobody from an oil or gas industry walked up and handed me a check, but you know how you get checks mailed to you and you're not sure who, what, when, how, or why?
Sure.
I mean, to be perfectly honest.
Well, there's a lot of different branches, too. I mean, you've got, construction aggregate industries that can be considered because they also have a side business, et cetera. So.
I don't want any to, you know, Kathleen, you know, I mean, somebody supports us. We're not sure why. They support our values. They support what we represent. And considering I'm a local control gal, if they thought that I was going to vote for their bill, even if they did contribute, I guess they're sorely mistaken. So there you go.
Just one last footnote on
sure.
this, Rich. I heard a story this weekend from one of my constituents that a fellow who was a CEO in the oil and natural gas industry was working to stop the siting of an oil and natural gas site in his neighborhood. I think it had to do with water. It was a water storage facility for the mining industry. And his company basically put out a statement and said this is something he's doing personally. I believe that local people need the ability to say no. And if that CEO of the oil and natural gas industry wants to say no, he and everybody else in power, in the ruling elite of this country, need to allow local people, regardless of where they live, they need to allow them the ability to say no. And what I've been fighting for in this bill is to allow people to say no. And what this bill does through this early registration process is give the mines a back door to get around the local people saying no. And I think that's what the oil and natural gas industry is afraid of. They don't want local people to say no. But taking that away is taking away local control.
With that, let's take our first break. We've got one caller on the line who we're going to get to right after the break. We'll hear from Kurt in Chippewa Falls. But first, we've got to take this break. We're talking about the legislation that's in the fast track now in Madison as the state legislative session is drawing to a close, just about, 2 weeks, but even less time than that if you consider the work week of the legislature sometimes. But we've got Democratic State Senator Kathleen Weinhout of Alma and Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls. We'll take your calls. The number is 800-228-5615. We'll be back in just under a minute. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Legislative Roundup on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in this morning. We're talking with State Senator Kathleen Weinhout of Alma and Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls about legislation that is hustling through Madison right now. Just a couple weeks left of this legislative session, so lawmakers are very, very busy. The number 800-228-5615, if you've got a question about specific legislation or just a general question for lawmakers from your area, it's your chance to speak directly with them. Not often you get that chance, but for the rest of this hour, you can. 800-228-5615. So now we go to Kurt in Chippewa Falls. Thanks so much for calling, Kurt. What's on your mind?
I'd like to go back to the issue of the shutting down the poll ability of local precincts to set their own polling hours. Ms. Bernier claims that she's a local control supporter, but this is the legislation on the poll hours is exactly, again, anti-local control. And the reasoning for that is such a transparent excuse that I would be embarrassed to trot that out. Let's say the gas stations in the little towns shut down at 6 o'clock in the evening, but you've got your franchises in the cities that are 24 hours a day. Well, they should prevent those stations from staying open because that discriminates against your small town gas stations. And so the gas stations, the convenience stores should not be allowed to stay open past 6 o'clock in the evening. That's the same reasoning they're using for shutting down the poll hours.
Interesting comparison there. Representative Bernier, any thoughts on that?
That's an unusual comparison, and I wouldn't even compare it. State functions and federal functions in election law, state and federal laws have always regulated election processes. So there's really no local control with setting state and federal election law. They can't set their own.
All right. Thanks for that. Thanks for the call, Kurt. And we have a caller on the line now from Eau Claire. We're going to get to them right away. Just got in. The number, again, is 800-228-5615. If you've got a question or a comment for either Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma or Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls. Michael, you're on the air.
Yes. A question that concerns Senate Bill 300.
Okay, and what's that now?
It's about health insurance covering prescription drug for cancer patients.
Definitely been in the news a lot lately, so what's your question?
Well, number one, I am a cancer patient, just to make that clear. And I would like that bill to be brought up and passed because what's happening is it's considered a prescription drug, the drug I take for my chemotherapy. And the pill itself costs $9,300 a month. And because it is not IV treatment, it's covered under prescription drug treatment. And as people know, prescription drug coverage is a lot less than, like, major medical coverage. So there's a lot of jockeying around for me to try to get that pill covered every month. And I guess from the standpoint of, you know, how much the drug cost, and for instance, I've been paying insurance now, health insurance, for over 40 years, and to have the insurance companies say that this chemotherapy, because it's taken by a pill, is not covered under major medical is kind of ridiculous. And
I happen to know precisely what you're talking about. One of those medications would be Gleevec is one of them that is very effective on leukemia, and that's oral chemotherapy that is very successful with leukemia. And I have been advocating for this with my colleagues as well. And I'm not sure of the current status, but I did have a conversation with a number of interested parties on this issue. Pat Strakota has been heading this up in the Assembly. And I believe as well that a chemotherapy, whether it be oral chemotherapy or intravenous chemotherapy, if it's successful in treating cancer, it should be treated similarly. So I agree with you, and God bless you. I wish you all the best in the world, but I will continue. Matter of fact, you've prompted me to check into that and find out where that is now.
All right.
If I could just
Kathleen
add, just quickly. Michael, I strongly support this bill. I've co-sponsored it twice in two different sessions. We can't get it through the Senate for a vote because there are so many Republicans that are listening to the insurance industry that, as you know, wants to slow this down. I would ask you to take a moment and send either Senator Fitzgerald either an email or a phone call. Tell him you're from here. Tell him that you talked, and please tell him to bring the bill to the floor for a vote. We need to vote on it this week. There are senators on both sides of the aisle that want to see it voted on. If it comes to the floor, it will pass. So it needs to be put on the calendar, and it needs to come to a vote, and it needs to happen right now.
Could you explain, Senator Vinehout, that we've read about some kind of a procedural move that Senator Fitzgerald, the majority leader in the Senate, used to block this. What exactly did he do?
Well, his power is in controlling what happens on the Senate floor. So the majority leader, because the Republicans control the majority in a committee we call Senate Organization, which sets the calendar, he can decide if he's going to bring the bill to the floor or not for a vote. And he has decided that there's not enough Republicans that agree. So, you know, certainly every single one of those 18 Republicans in the Senate, some of whom support this, some of whom don't, should get a letter or an email or a call. And Senator Fitzgerald himself has the power to bring this forward, to put it on the Senate calendar. And hopefully that'll happen this week. But it needs to happen soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I was hoping is that maybe some of the listeners could call Senator Fitzgerald, because I've already put in the call, and I've talked to a lot of my friends, and they've put in the call. But, you know, it takes quite a movement to sway somebody that's probably getting a lot of money from the insurance companies for his campaigns. And it's just clearly a campaign issue and funding, because why would you not help your constituents that have cancer, and that, like I use Revlimid, it's just a brand name and happens to work for the multiple myeloma that I have, and my time is limited. I've had my termination notice. That this stuff doesn't go away; it keeps coming back. And this is a drug that helps me. And why wouldn't a senator support people when their lives are at risk? It just baffles me to no end.
I really appreciate you calling in, Michael.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your story, Michael. And we'll see. I mean, time will tell, I guess, on that legislation, and maybe it'll come up again next session if it doesn't get through this time. Jane and Eau Claire, we're going to you next. Jane, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you. I wanted to ask about something that I heard about at a Jonah meeting. It's 2013 AB 784, which was a bipartisan bill that would establish a driver certificate option for immigrants without documents. And since they passed that Real ID Act, which you required people, the states, to issue driver's license, it was changed. And so we've been trying to get they have this driver certificate, because there's so many people who do depend on these immigrants to help, and they need transportation. And we had this meeting where a number of the families were there, and if this might be put off, these people just have to wait. They have a great deal of trouble getting back and forth. And I would like to know where that bill is and what's happened, because I think it's really important that it get passed before you go into recess again. In fact, I'm real concerned that you have such long times off. And so all these things that are really important to individual people just sort of get lost in the shuffle. So please give me some information about what's happening on that one. Thank you.
Thanks for that. Kathleen Vinehout, I mean, there are so many bills introduced that I'm not sure what she's talking about right now.
Well, this is an issue that's actually been around for several years. It especially came into the forefront when Wisconsin mandated that everyone have insurance. Now, if you recall the last time you went to sign up for new insurance, your insurance agent took a copy of your driver's license, mm-hmm. and that's part of the protocol. Well, the problem is, if you're an illegal immigrant, you don't have a driver's license, you can't, or it's very difficult for you to get insurance, which means that this is a risk. This puts everyone who drives and rides in a car at risk. So many other states have dealt with this problem by having a driver certificate or a certain type of a license that would allow people who are in this country without clear documentation to be able to get insurance by getting some type of a certificate. Utah, a Republican state, has been doing it for many, many years. This issue came up in 2009. In the 2009-11 budget, it was originally put into the budget. Of course, probably didn't belong in the budget because it had nothing to do with fiscal matters of the state. But even the Democrats had a difficult time agreeing to pass this bill. The Republicans are even queasier about it because we haven't yet dealt with the national problem of fixing the immigration laws. Absolutely, the immigration laws need to be fixed at the federal level. If that was done, this problem would be resolved in the because it hasn't been done. I agree with Jane that we need to pass a bill that's similar to the one she mentioned. It's something that I think more and more people are agreeing with, but it isn't something that I believe the legislature will get done because, frankly, I don't believe there's enough votes to pass it.
Representative Bernier, do you have any thoughts on this bill, or are you familiar with what?
I am familiar with the bill. Spoke with Jocasta Zamarripa from Milwaukee, Representative Zamarripa from Milwaukee, on this issue, along with a number of her constituents who came to the Capitol. The senator is correct. There's people on both sides of the aisle that are a little queasy about this. Having a friend who worked in the DMV, one of the criteria I felt should be clear, and that bill does not make it clear, that the driver's license as provided or the certificate or whatever has to be clearly identified, which may or may not be a problem if the person is here illegally. So there are a lot of significant issues involved with this. And having our federal government do something about our immigration issue, you know, ideally should come first. And we have sent a letter, a bipartisan letter, to our congressional delegation asking them to do something about this. And I spoke with Congressman Duffy, and I said, at the very least, start the process one step at a time. First, border security, and then getting the individuals that are here documented. We need to know who's here. So, you know, it is a significant concern. We certainly want people who are driving to be safe drivers and legal drivers. By the same token, it's a lot more complicated than that.
Right. With that, let's take our final break. We're talking with Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls and Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma, talking about the mad dash in Madison, known as the end of the state legislative session. Lawmakers are pushing a tremendous number of bills and trying to get them through before the session adjourns, officially April 3rd. We're taking your calls as well. We've got one caller on the line, but have two lines open. The number 800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment for two lawmakers from Western Wisconsin. This is the West Side Legislative Roundup. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us. This is the West Side Legislative Roundup on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're joined by Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma and Republican State Representative Kathy Bernier of Chippewa Falls to explain what's happening down in Madison as the state legislative session draws to a close. Very busy time for lawmakers. A lot of stuff happening. It's tough even for the press to keep up with it at times. So it's good that we've got these two lawmakers on to help us understand and put it in plain English for us. The number to call in for with questions or comments about specific legislation or just issues in general, 800-228-5615. The number again, 1-800-228-5615. Blueprint for Prosperity. The governor has been traveling throughout the state quite a bit, trying to drum up support for this. And I know that there were different chunks to the governor's Blueprint for Prosperity, which he mentioned during his State of the State. You had worker training and you had tax cuts. I believe the worker training, at least one part of it, passed both, and it has been sent to the governor. It had to do with technical colleges. What hasn't gone through all the way are the tax cuts. And Representative Bernier, I think we're talking like $500 million in tax cuts. That's on coming from a tax revenue surplus along with some, I think it has something to do with income tax cuts. But where's that at?
Tax withholding. You know, interestingly, that tax withholding, the state of Wisconsin was taking 120% of what they actually had coming to them, according to our income. Hmm. So what the governor had proposed is let's take it back to 100% of what you actually owe the state government. And so I thought that was a good thing, because that was one of the things that I had considered addressing, is why are we giving the government more money than they have coming?
Sure.
So that I thought was a good thing. The property tax relief actually comes by funding the technical colleges directly with state aid, state funding.
So they don't have
and
to,
they
theory,
don't have to go to the property taxpayer with as much request for revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the property tax comes in. The worker training is just an add-on. I was the lead for Wisconsin Fast Forward earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
This also expands it to the disabled. And so it will help get worker training for more disabled individuals and get them into the workforce, and that's a great thing. So the technical colleges are working in tandem with the workforce development centers and the employers, and I know that there's some individuals in my district, and I'm sure in the senator's district, that have received some of those grants for training, and it's going well from what I understand, so I'm very happy about that.
Right, I think there are two bills that have to do with taxes, and they're in the Assembly right now. Any idea if those are being – I thought they were in the Assembly. Are they – any idea whether those will be called up this week or next?
I think that one of the reasons why there's some confusion is because the Assembly did pass them. They sent them to the Senate.
Oh,
but then
I got
the
it
Senate,
backwards.
No, you're right. The Senate changed them. They changed them in order to get some votes on
which
the
is not
Republican
unusual.
Side.
Right, right.
So the Assembly thought its work was done, but it's going to come back to haunt you again this week. There'll probably be more discussion on
Thank
this.
Thank you, Senator.
I know. I voted against the bill. I had my own alternative. I wanted to put half the money into savings and half of it to pay down the debt, because I, as well as some of my Republican colleagues, are worried that the next budget, we went from a structural surplus of $809 million to a structural deficit of, now as the bill stands, negative $650 million, which means that the state needs to bring in more money to cover the commitments that the governor made. And we have the second lowest rainy day fund, despite the fact that the law required that half of that surplus go into the state savings account, the rainy day fund. That didn't happen. And that was one of the concerns that even the Republicans had in the Senate.
So. Well, concerns aside, is this the governor's plan going to pass before the end of the session?
Sure.
Sure? Yeah.
Well, it's already passed this.
Oh, that's right. It's back
yeah,
to the
so
Assembly.
It's back to
okay.
the Unless the Assembly changes it again, and then I'll be back to us.
Sure, it will.
Well, we're talking with State Representative Kathy Bernier. She's a Republican from Chippewa Falls, and State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, a Democrat from Alma. This is the Westside Legislative Roundup. We are taking your calls. The number is 1-800-228-5615. We now go back to Eau Claire, and Joanne is on the air. Joanne, thanks so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Good morning. I am very concerned about why this legislature and governor want to make it more difficult to vote. Every Wisconsinite should be concerned about this. There's also a nationwide push, unfortunately. Anyone who wants to take away the ease of voting should be ashamed of themselves. Now, there was a recent comment this weekend on national news questioning, are Jim Crow laws rearing their ugly head in Wisconsin? And there's a lot of sense to that. It's obvious that there are some very dark underlying reasons for this Republican push, this and voter ID legislation. And the sinister reason is that it's voter suppression, pure and simple. A larger voter turnout favors the Democrats, and that is the reason the Republicans are pushing for this. Unfortunate. Thank you very much for letting me comment.
Thank you so much for the call, Joanne. And we've already touched on this issue, but again, is it about voter suppression, in your opinion, Kathy Bernier?
I think the comments weren't worth even commenting about.
Okay.
I do think, Rich, though, people are going to be rightly upset when they understand that it's going to be harder for them to vote. And we, the Democrats, had an amendment to pass out the names and phone numbers of your local legislators and the governor so that you could call and complain. And I think people should complain. This is wrong. Wisconsin has had some of the most open voting laws in its entire history. This is about voter suppression, and it should not pass.
And with that, we'll go back to the phones, and another caller from Eau Claire. We've got Jody on the line. And Jody, what's on your mind?
Hi, I just wanted to touch base on the human trafficking laws that have been introduced in Wisconsin. There's several of them. The one that seems to be closest to passing is AB 620, which is an omnibus bill, and I was just wondering if the ladies could comment whether that's going to make it through the Senate before the session is done or not.
AB 620, could you briefly describe what it is?
Hi, Jody.
Hi. Sorry.
Kathy Bernier? Well, whoever wants to describe what it is, please go ahead. Kathy, let's start with you.
Well, the human trafficking has been an issue, and it's been in the news. And Jody has been working diligently with Fierce Freedom.
Oh,
if this is the
Jody
that I'm speaking to.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Jody, I am sorry. I have been so busy that I have not been able to check on that, but I will check on that bill and find out where it's at. I don't think there's any reason why it shouldn't pass. It is to deal with sex trafficking and or that sort of thing, which has been at a huge epidemic as of late. And so we have wonderful people like Fierce Freedom, Jody working on the issue, and you know, I suspect it should come through. I don't know. It hasn't hit the Senate yet, has
there
it?
There is one bill that the Senate sent to the Assembly, so it should be up in the Assembly this week.
The omnibus bill?
Yeah, we're very close to getting at least part of the problem resolved. And there are a couple of other bills, but at least one of them has been sent by the Senate to the Assembly, and hopefully we'll be able to work on the other ones this week.
Okay, yes.
Okay, so, thanks, ladies.
There you have it, Jody. Thanks for calling. With that, we'll go to we'll just keep the calls rolling. We probably have time to take one or maybe two more. The number is 1-800-228-5615. Terry and Colfax, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. With all the Wisconsin fast forward and all this, what I call short term, not much funding, the basic statutes of funding the tech college system basically died with AB 177 under Chair Stephen Nass. I'm very concerned. I spent over a decade saying that the attendance to or enrolling in public higher education is completely personal choice. It doesn't belong on local property taxpayers. And I can't see where both sides or both parties can't get together and understand that fact. 177 was probably the most Democratic bill I've seen in years, where actually we at the local level could have made the decision through referendum whether to keep funding on the backs of local taxpayers or move it up to the state level, like the funding of the UW system. I'm just confused because this looks like party politics to me, and it shouldn't be that at all.
Well, I agree with you, Terry. I believe that we should spend more money on the tech colleges at the state level. And I had a bill to put $350 million of this surplus in the tech colleges and the two-year colleges, I would also add. But $300 million went to the tech colleges. What we need, what's happened instead is that the tech colleges have been starved for cash. They lost over $70 million in the 2011-13 budget. And they came back and they asked the legislature for $90 million, and instead the legislature gave them $5 million. So that's part of the problem right now. If the state doesn't step in and fund these commitments like they need to, then it comes back to the property taxpayers, and everybody knows that the property tax bill is the one bill that everybody hates.
The property taxes, the tech colleges like that source of revenue because it's quick and easy. So if they need to adjust their budgets, they go to the property taxpayers each and every year because it's more convenient and it's easier to get the funding, and their funding source is more flexible. And so that is one of the things that we're up against. But I agree with you as well. As a matter of fact, I believe that we should take all education off the property tax and that we should fund it through state revenues because I believe that the property tax should be more local government related and property related expenses coming off property tax. Then we wouldn't have to create all of these loopholes or write-offs, adjusting your income tax in order to offset your high property taxes. And so you get rid of... And hopefully, I've been pushing this with Representative Kuyanga, who is working on a whole tax rewrite. And I said, you can't address income tax, property tax, sales tax without addressing all taxes at once. You can't do it in a vacuum. And so we need to do that. During a Blue Ribbon Commission way back in the Thompson administration, this was a recommendation way back then, is to only have property-related expenses on your property tax, and I'm getting the signal to be quiet.
Well,
so thank you.
You weren't supposed to say it out loud, but time is running short. Terry, thanks so much for the calls. Thanks so much to all the listeners who called in. A lot of great questions. A lot of people paying attention to legislation out there. I'll give you each 15 seconds. How about this? What is the thing to watch in your respective House of Government, in the Assembly? Kathy Brunier. What to keep an eye on?
The bills that I want to pass.
That's right. Quickly.
There was three top bills that I met with the senator, the majority leader on, and that's my Amish bill, our Amish.
It would exempt them from some certain.
Exempt them from certain building code requirements. I have a personal property tax bill that it hasn't been treated as it should, and it hasn't been equal for all large equipment businesses with personal property tax, which I'm hoping that'll all go away at some point, too. And then I have a county clerk bill to specify roles and responsibilities of the county clerk so that they don't end up like a state treasurer and a secretary of state with the positions being removed because they have nothing to do.
And Senator Vinehout.
I suggest people take a look at Senate Bill 655, which makes, I strongly oppose and I'd like to see dead. It makes it easier for lobbyists to contribute to campaigns, and it raises to $20,000 the limit that corporations can use to shake down their employees to make political contributions.
All right. I wish we had more time. There's so many things that even on my questions list that we weren't able to touch on. But thank you both so much, State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, Democrat of Alma, and Republican State Representative Kathy Brunier. Great conversation. Thanks so much. Thanks to the callers. And keep an eye on what's happening in Madison. There's a lot flying around down there this time of year. Tune in next week. We're going to be talking about local regulation as it pertains to frac sand mining. I'm Rich Kramer. Have a good week.